Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on national health care insurance right after this. You know, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." Now, you'll find that quotation in Acts 5, verse 29. You know, that's a pretty revolutionary concept. And it's impossible to put into practice unless you know the law yourself. Now, can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three authorities that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to our federal constitution is number one. The Congress of the United States in Public Law 97-280 is the second. And the United States Supreme Court in a case called Seeger versus United States is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census, public school, Social Security, vaccinations, or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? Do you know how to look them up, research them out, or code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal intrusion into your constitutional rights? And if you don't know the law of the scripture and the law of the state, then are you in a very good position to challenge either one? Now, if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package now? You know, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our school, the Mosaic Law School, is available on compact disc for a built home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, that free general law CD package is on our website. If you're online, go to our website, go to the appropriate page, and then download it direct. All right, we're talking about national health care insurance. The President of the United States says that if not now, when? And I answered that question last time and said, never. I don't want it. I'm not here to tell the other 300 million Americans out there that they should not have a national public socialized medicine health care system. I'm not here to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. And I'm not political, not trying to get you to vote for this one way or the other. I just wanted to report on some facts that maybe you hadn't heard before. During the Bush years, in the early years of the Bush administration back in 2001, 2, and 3, we got some legislation enacted, big programs like the National Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act, which involved about 1,000 or 1,300 pages each, and nobody in Congress ever read them before they voted on them. Now, in this national health care debate, all of the senators and representatives have time looking at this bill to accept it, reject it, write amendments to cure any defects that are in it. And there's a fellow down in Phoenix, Arizona, that's doing just that. His name is Peter Fleckenstein. He's a blogger and a former Marine from Phoenix, Arizona, and he's going through the Obama health care package page by page and highlighting the provisions that he finds there. Clearly, Fleckenstein has struck a nerve. His list, originally published as a series of Twitter posts, has gone viral by email. Within days, the liberal fascists published his personal information on Twitter as a means to silence him. Fleckenstein promises legal action. What that means is that they took a lot of personal things and published it about him. It's called libel and slander. They probably published that he's gay or that he's divorced and isn't paying his child support. You know, whatever they can, whatever skeletons are in somebody's closet, oh, they dig those right up right away and publish them, and they say, hey, look at this guy. He doesn't pay his child support and he's queer. Well, excuse me, but his sexual orientation isn't necessarily at issue here. What we're trying to talk about is the national health care program. And whether or not he is ahead of, on schedule, or behind on his child support payments, maybe he is a bad father. Maybe he is a jerk. But again, we're not here to discuss his child support payments. What we're here to discuss is, did he report to us the true facts concerning what he dug out concerning the president's health care proposal? That's what I wanted to report on. So I just wanted to tell you that if you've heard something that's bad, because that's what happens here. See, when you when you're in this business, the reporting and commentary business, let me give you an illustration. See, I come on the air and I make a report. And to the people that agree with me, they think that I'm like Jesus and walk on water. And the people that disagree with me, they think that I'm Satan incarnate and that I'm the false prophet. I mean, it's kind of natural. I mean, you either agree with people or you don't. So, now, the problem with a commentator is that over time, everybody will ultimately hate me. It's inevitable. Inevitable. And the reason for that is, as soon as I take a position and I say, hey, this is right or that's wrong, on whatever subject matter that we may be discussing, there's going to be half the people that agree with it and half the people that disagree. So immediately, when I take a position, half of you are going to love me and half of you are going to hate me. Okay, so that eliminates half of my audience coming out of the chute on issue number one. So then we take up issue number two. And then again, half the people are going to agree with me and half the people are going to disagree. So now I've lost half of the one half of the audience that agreed with me the first time. So now I'm down to a quarter. Now I come up with a third issue. And then again, half the people love me and half the people hate me. And so as a result of that, I'm now down to 1/8. And then this is kind of like the half-life of nuclear waste. You know, you lose half every so often. So every time you pick up a new issue and you take a position on this new issue, you lose half your audience. And so as time progresses along, it's half of an eighth and half of a 16th and a half of a 32nd and a half. Always have somebody out there. There's always one or two that still agree with me. But you see, your audience gets smaller and smaller. Now, on this healthcare debate over here, it started off about half the people want socialized medicine and about half the people don't. Now, the half that want socialized medicine are the half that aren't going to pay for it. The people that are going to pay for it are already paying for their health care, and they don't want to pay for somebody else's. They're greedy, selfish individuals like me who are happy with the system just the way it is. It's the free market system. Yes, it's got problems. Yes, it's probably not perfect. And yes, it's probably in need of some kind of overhaul or change. But it's a hell of a lot better, as old Winston Churchill once observed. He said, democracy is the worst system of government ever devised by man until it's compared with any other form. And yeah, the democracy's got a lot of bad problems with it. There's no doubt about it. But when you compare it to the Russians or the Chinese or somebody else, you know, it's the worst system until you compare it with any other. And so any of these problems that you take up, I don't care what it happens to be, whether it's healthcare, insurance, or the economy, or whatever it is, you know, there's half the people that are for it and half the people that are against it. Like as not, neither side of these one halves really know very much about what they're talking about. And I want to be the first one to stand up and say, I don't know much about this healthcare thing. I'm not an expert on it, one way or the other, just a reporter. So when I see that this Fleckenstein is being attacked by that one half that disagrees with him, then that sends us a pretty powerful signal. It says, this guy's onto something. See, if he wasn't onto something, then nobody would be opposed to him. He'd be like a Presbyterian preacher. See, a preacher gets up in the pulpit on Sunday morning, and he mouths off, and he talks a lot, and then he sits down, and nobody's mad at him. And that's because he hasn't told anybody anything. He's never taken a stand on anything. He's never said to you, right's right and wrong's wrong. Black's black and white's white. Preachers don't do that. Neither do politicians. So preachers and politicians are, in a nutshell, hypocrites. They may have an opinion, but they would never tell you what it is. And they always report to you in platitudes. God, wouldn't it be wonderful if every American had health care insurance? My God, wouldn't it be wonderful if every American had a Lamborghini, for crying out loud? I think the answer is yes. Now, is it possible to provide every American with a Lamborghini? And the answer is no. It's impossible. Is it possible to provide every American with quality health care insurance? The answer is no. There's not enough money out there to do that. Okay, now with that said, is the government going to do it anyway? Yes, they're going to do it anyway. Is it going to cost us an arm and a leg, and is it going to achieve their goals? No. It's going to cost us an arm and a leg. It isn't going to achieve their goals. There isn't a socialized program in the world that does what the president's program promises to do. But you can't sell it unless you tell people this is going to do what you want it to do. You have to tell people what they want to hear if you want to sell it. That's just one of the first rules in sales. You tell the customer what he wants to hear. Is what you're telling him true? No. Can you sell this guy this automobile if you tell him the truth? No. Do you want to sell him the automobile? Yes. Do you have to lie to him? Yes. Are you going to lie to him? Yes. Are you going to sell him the automobile? Yes. Is he going to be disappointed after the sale? Absolutely. Do you have a twinge of conscience? No. That's what salesmen are. Salesman's here to sell you what you don't want, can't use, shouldn't have, and don't need. But by God, he's going to sell it to you. And our president is a god-awful good salesman. God, I love that. Boy, I wish I'd train. I wish I could say I trained Barack Obama in sales. I trained salesmen. I've trained a lot of them. By God, I never had a salesman like Barack Obama. I mean, that guy is top of the line. Is he a liar? Absolutely. Is he good at it? The best. Well, you know, I got to rank him right up there with Franklin Roosevelt, Bill Clinton. George Bush Jr., he was not a good liar. In fact, I got to tell you, I think George Bush Jr. was probably the poorest liar God ever put breath into. There's nothing sophisticated about him, nothing good about him. Franklin Roosevelt, my God, my dad reported to me, he said, that guy can lie to you and make you love it. You know he's lying to you, but you like it. Bill Clinton was like that. God love him. Bill Clinton is a consummate liar, wonderful liar. His wife, Hillary, just as good as, maybe a little better than Bill. Hillary is just got awful good. And Barack Obama is right up there with him. I mean, that guy is the best. He is right up there with the best. Now, when you're lying and then the truth comes out, this is the worst thing that can happen to you. Let me tell you how this works. As an old-timey lawyer, I got to tell you. The best thing that can happen to you is that when somebody comes in, they lie about you. Telling lies, that's the best thing that can happen to you. The worst thing that can happen to you is when they come in and tell you the truth about you. Oh, God, that's death. When somebody comes in and tells the truth about you, that's the worst thing that can happen to you. No defense to it. And that's where this guy Peter Fleckenstein is. He took up the bill, and all legislation is good legislation. Barack Obama is pushing good legislation. This National Health Care Insurance Program is good legislation. It's good for Pfizer and Merck and the pharmaceutical industry. It's good for the American Medical Association, and it's good for the hospitals. It's good for politics and politicians. It's going to be good. It's going to be a great program for a lot of people. And then there's the majority of people, all the people that have to pay for it, the people that are going to receive the goods, the guy that's actually going to buy the car. Now, is it good for the majority? I don't think so. I think that the majority, I think about 25% of the American public are going to love this health care insurance program. It's going to just work like a shot, and it's going to make them a lot of money. And about 75% are going to pay the bills, and they're not going to like it at all, and they're really going to rue the day that they supported and passed it. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. There's no such thing as bad legislation. It never has occurred in the past, doesn't occur today, and never will in the future. Now, whether or not this is good legislation for the majority of people, now that, in most cases, legislation is bad for the majority of people, but it appears to be good at the time. Just like the Iraq War appeared to be a good thing in 2003, turned out to be, well, you know, now today we look back and say nothing. Probably wasn't one of our better ideas. Now, it's easy to see why the liberals are tripping over themselves to suppress this information that Fleckenstein has unearthed. At its best, the information Fleckenstein culled from the bowels of the Obamacare bill are absurd. I'm going to underline that word. Well, you can say that again. There's 118 of them, and I'm going to underline the word absurd. When you really understand what the Obamacare bill is and what Congress and Obama are trying to do with it, however, it turns from absurd to nearly terrifying. I'm going to underline that whole sentence. It turns from absurd to terrifying. Now, on the surface, the president comes on TV and he says, if not now, when? We need health care insurance for every American. The system's broke. It needs to be reformed. You know, blah, blah, blah. As a free market enthusiast, I think if you just leave it alone, it'll take care of itself. The marketplace will do that. It doesn't require any tinkering at all. The old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, applies here. It ain't broke. Last program, I told you one of my experiences. Now, most of us aren't going to have a hip replacement. We had one here in our family, and we bought, paid for it, worked out fine. And then it's true, there's some people out there that probably couldn't afford it, so I told you about SMILE. Remember last part of the last program, I said, you know, there are people out there that need charity, and I don't deny it. And then when I saw that appeal to charity, I said, you know, for $250, you know, every time I give them $1,000, I would have the satisfaction of knowing that four children somewhere in the world have a cleft palate that has been surgically repaired and that I had a part in doing it. You know, that's very satisfying to me. I like doing that, and I'm going to do that. I have never given a quarter to this SMILE operation before, and I'm not going to speak too fast because I haven't researched it out. I haven't checked out their credentials. It may be a fraud. I don't know. But they had a good program on last night, and if they're telling the truth, and if I can verify it, I'm going to support them, because I think that's something that needs to be done. And a lot of people can't afford that. And should every child in the world have a chance at life without a cleft palate? No, no. A cleft palate is caused by a mineral deficiency prior to birth. It's a mineral deficiency. And the parents, and especially that pregnant mother, should have been careful with their diet prior to that birth. But now it's a past done deal, isn't it? The kid's born, and he's got a cleft palate, and he's going to die just like that unless somebody intervenes and does something about it. So here's where modern medicine comes in, and this is where modern medicine really shines. There is something that can be done. It should have been done prior to birth, and it wasn't. Here's something that can be done, and it ought to be done, and I'm gonna be one of those champions. Now, this guy Fleckenstein over here has a blog, and he says, here's something that should be done. Somebody should report to the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives of America what this Obama health care plan is going to do for them and to them. I like that. I agree with this guy Fleckenstein. I don't know what his personal problems in life are. And I might not like this guy if I met him. I probably, wouldn't like him either. These liberals, they don't like him, and they're exposing him. I get exposed all the time. People disagree with me, and they just get right out there, and they want to expose me. Well, hell, I never denied it. I'm probably as bad as you think I am, maybe a little worse. And don't deny it, but I like the report, and I like this guy's report. This is a dynamite report here. Mr. Fleckenstein, I got to tell you, this is really good. Now, information has been taken from different sources for formatting purposes, but verified back to Fleckenstein's original work. Fleckenstein's blog is here. Okay, now you got this? Write it down now, kids. Get your pen out here. I want you to go here and check up on me and see if I'm lying to you. You can get right in the horse's mouth. http://. Got that? http://blog, B-L-O-G dot. And then FleckSoFlife.com. Now I'm going to spell that for you. It's just all one word. It's FLEFE.com/. So let's try that one again. http://blog dot. Here comes that one long word. FLECKSOFLIFE.com/. All right. Now there's the original information. Now this bill is 1,000 pages plus. So as we go through here, it's a four-page report, and he's not condemning the entire bill. Out of 1,000 pages, there's only 118 terrifying aspects to it. But in this 1,000 pages are 118 things that don't work well for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. I don't deny that it works well for Microsoft, or it might work well for Merck or Pfizer. It might work well for the Congress of the United States and maybe for the American Medical Association. But it doesn't work for you, and it doesn't work for me. It's going to cost us a lot of money. And it's going to create some bureaucracies over here that are going to be prying into your life and changing. I mentioned this the other day. I said, government intrusion. This bill is going to create a lot of government intrusion into your life. Things that government is not intruding into your life concerning today, they're going to be intruding into your life concerning things tomorrow. So I wanted to tell you what some of them are. Number one, on page 22, it mandates audits of all employers that self-insure. Self-insure. Those are people like me. I'm self-insured. I'm not an employer, but I'm self-insured. I'm the kind of guy that takes care of his own bills when they come due. So I understand insurance. I'm an old-timey businessman, and I can add and subtract, and I can do percentages. Insurance is called limited liability. And under the limited liability theory, 10 people pay $500 into a fund. So that's $5,000 paid into a fund to cover a projected liability or loss that we know statistically is going to occur. That's going to cost $1,000. It's only going to happen one time out of 10. We don't know who it's going to happen to, but we know statistically it's going to happen to one of us. So it makes sense for 10 people to put $1,000 into a fund, or $500 into a fund, knowing that one person is going to suffer this loss. That way, let's say we put in $500. One guy suffers a loss, and let's suppose it's you. So you're going to have this $1,000 loss, but you only paid in $500. Or you have this $5,000 loss, you only paid in $500. See, it's beneficial to you, and it didn't cost all of us very much. Now, there's administrative costs that come out of this, and profit, and one thing and another. But this is the theory behind limited liability. What this means is that not everybody can collect. If everybody's going to collect, then there's no purpose for limited liability. Now, here's what's wrong with the president's plan. He said, every American is going to be insured. Okay, well, every American is going to have a health care claim. We don't know for how much. See, you might have a catastrophic illness like cancer, costs $100,000. You might have a heart attack or bypass surgery, and it's $100,000. Or you might have a case of the flu, and it might only cost you $150. But everybody's going to have this cost. And the average cost to insure them is $3,000. That's 8% of the payrolls of America. So we're going to have to raise everybody's costs by 8%. Now, the reason I'm opposed to it is because, you see, as a self-insured fellow, I don't eat pork. I don't eat fat. I don't eat shellfish. I don't eat much white flour, white sugar, and so on. And I don't have bad health. So I'm careful about my health and my diet, so I'm not going to have any claims. That's why I'm self-insured. I'm not going to have any claims. But now remember, I said the other day we did have a claim. My boy needed hip replacement surgery. So I take my $3,000 per person. I put it in a coffee can, and I save it over the years. Well, there's four people in our family, $12,000 a year. In 10 years, I have $120,000. I'd pay $15,000 out. So I have $105,000 profit. Now, that would go to the insurance company. Now, government sees that, and they say, we want to cash in on this profit that comes from all of this health insurance. Government, instead of the healthcare insurance industry, which is big, prosperous, and filled with fat cats, the government wants to opt out and take over those businesses, run them out of business, and take over the business and the profit for themselves. It's a hell of a good idea for government, and I don't deny it. It's a hell of a bad plan for all of you health insurance investors and in health insurance companies. But I'm one of those that's self-insured, and it's a great plan for people like me to just opt out. Now, all of a sudden, they say they're going to mandate audits. That means my government wants to come in here, and they want to audit me because I'm self-insured. Well, what happens to my Fourth Amendment right to be secure in my person, houses, papers, and effects? Now, if they came in to audit my coffee can with my contributions to my health care, that would be one thing. But no, they don't want to do that. They want my bank accounts. They want my disbursement journal and payroll records. They want all of my business records to audit. Gee, they might find income tax evasion. My God, they might find building code violations. I mean, you know, if the government just came into everybody's house and audited everybody's books, do you know they'd find a lot of crimes? They would find a lot of missing taxes that most of us don't want them to find. Now, do we? So right away, that provision on page 22 says to me, oh, I don't think that's very good for little Georgie Gordon. Page 29, admission. Your health care will be rationed. Rationed. Well, rationing is what happens when you have too many people wanting to buy the same thing at the same price. This is what happened in World War II. See, government needed a lot of rubber to fund the Army and the Navy and the Marines. And then all the civilians wanted to buy up that rubber in the form of rubber tires to drive their cars. So the government came in and they rationed rubber. That's because there's too much demand on the limited supply. Too much demand on a limited supply either does one of two things. It raises the price dramatically, which is the methodology in a free marketplace for rationing, that is pricing. Or the government comes in and says, no, we're not going to change the price, but we're going to ration. You can only have one tire per year. Okay, and so you got your one tire last year, so you're going to get one until this year. Get your one tire last month, can't get another tire until next year. So that's what's coming. It's rationing. And on page 29, the authors of the bill admit that health care is going to be rationed. Well, it's rationed everywhere in the world where they have socialized medicine. And that's because all of the services are free. Now watch what happens. Let's suppose that you're a pregnant female, and all of the services are free. Well, there's no point in not going to the pediatrician, right, lady? Now, if you have to pay this pediatrician $150 every time you walk into his office, all of a sudden, do you need to go in and see him once a week for $600 a month or once a month for $150 a month? I mean, see how you ration that out? When I was a kid, an office call to a doctor, like going to Dr. Walsh, was $5. Now, in those days, we made $1.75 an hour or about $14 a day. So to go to Dr. Walsh took about one-third of a day's pay. So when I said to my daddy, I'm sick or I've got this or that wrong with me, my daddy was very reluctant to spend a third of a day's pay to take me to Dr. Walsh. He would want to see me vomit. He would want to see me writhe on my bed in agony and pain with tears flowing from my eyeballs to convince him that he should give up a third of a day's pay to take me to Dr. Walsh. Now, if you have to pay this third of a day's pay, you will not go to the doctor near as often, in which case then the doctor will have more time to spend on other people that have real maladies, and not just hypochondriacs. See, every hypochondriac in America will be in the doctor's office twice a week, and there's a lot of hypochondriacs out there. And when the hypochondriac is in the doctor's office bitching about his imagined pains, then you're going to have to wait in the doctor's office with your real pain until the doctor gets through with the hypochondriac. See how that works? Because the hypochondriac isn't paying for this service, and neither are you. So when you have something that's free, it's going to be very, very widely used. And the more used it is, then the less there's going to be available for you when you need it. That's what the rationing is all about. Hang on, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by pre-arrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications are endorsing and recommending what we do here at the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a report by Peter Fleckenstein. Peter Fleckenstein reporting on the Obamacare broken down for you with a caveat that says, God help us. I'll underline that. Now, I'm not for or against the Obama health care plan. I'm not going to participate in it. I don't think that most of the Amish are going to participate in it. Religious free exercise will come to the fore. And those of us that oppose it on religious ground will be opting out. Just like the census, you know, those of us that are religious objectors opt out. We don't participate in the census. We don't participate in a lot of government programs that the rest of you do, like public school. I'm not opposed to public school, so if you think that you're a public school advocate and that I'm threatening you, no, relax, it's okay. I don't participate in public school, and I don't recommend it to anybody else. But I'm fully aware of the fact that most Americans support that 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, the one that calls for free education for all children in public school, even though public school is the most expensive schooling program in the world here in the United States at more than $10,000 per pupil or per child per year. It's the most expensive free education for all children in public school that's been created on planet Earth so far. So don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but I don't want to pay for educating your kid. And then I want to pay for educating my own kid, and so that's what I do. So as a reporter, I want to bring to your attention that this the free public health care system here is going to cost you an arm and a leg. It's going to be very expensive. It's going to be, in the aggregate, more expensive for you than it is now. So if you think that health care today is expensive and needs to be reformed, well, it's going to cost you more later. Now, somebody's going to jump up and say, no, not for the poor. No, that's a mistake. You poor people are going to be hit harder than Bill Gates. And here's the way this works. The president comes out and says, we need affordable health care insurance for the poor people of America, and we're going to give it to all you people in the middle class and the poor classes on the backs of the wealthy. That's Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. That's what he's telling them. Now, here's the way this is going to work. It's going to end up costing an 8% payroll tax. That 8% payroll tax is going to be paid by your employer. Your employer is going to raise his prices by 8%, and everybody who uses the goods and services that come out of any business in America where there's a payroll is going to pay that 8%. So let's say that you're a poor person and you eat at McDonald's. The McDonald's franchise is going to raise their prices by 8% to cover that payroll tax of 8%, which is going to be passed on to you in the form of an 8% increase in the price of a Big Mac and fries. And it's going to impact upon the poorest people of America first and the heaviest. And Bill Gates, who doesn't eat it at McDonald's anyway, is going to impose his tax benefit exemptions. And he isn't going to pay anything. Nothing. Bill Gates is not going to pay one penny in new taxes. Neither is Warren Buffett. And that's because the people with money have accountants, and those accountants keep them from paying those taxes because the Congress, who these rich people are constantly bribing through a form called lobbyists, pass special legislation for these people, and then they take advantage of that special legislation. You can rest assured that Citicorp, Bank of America, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, ain't paying a dime. But all of you people that buy McDonald's Big Macs and fries are going to pay every damn dime of it. So it is going to disproportionately fall upon the shoulders of the poorest people first, middle class second, wealthy class third, and the super wealthy not at all. All right, number three. Government committees will decide what treatments and benefits you get, and unlike an insurer, there will be no appeal process. So there's no appeal, and instead of having an insurance company deny you your coverage, it will be a bureaucrat instead. You're not going to get the coverage, but you'll have the satisfaction of knowing that it was not some fat cat capitalist. It was a government bureaucrat. Number four, the Health Choices Commissioner. There will be a commissar, that's what they call them in Russia, commissar, here we call them commissioners. You'll have a Health Choice Commissioner who will decide health benefits for you, and you will have no choice, none, zero, zilch. Okay, so there you are. Now, I pointed out to you the other day, I had a choice, and I told the doctor that. I said, now, you know, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to India. Now, I will still have my choice. I can still go to India. If I can't get health care here in America because I don't have my health care card, okay, you can rest assured that there will be many, many doctors out there in the underground free market, also known as the black market. Black market. That's called the free market, free enterprise. Yeah, those doctors will be available after hours and on weekends in their offices and clinics to take people like me in on the weekends to treat us, because we will still be paying them out of our coffee cans. You people that can't afford to do that will have to come into his office Monday through Friday and go through the rationing process and stand in line behind the hypochondriacs who are there getting their health care at the same time you are. But I won't. I'll be coming in on the weekends paying for it out of my coffee can, which is what I'm doing now, making a private deal in the free marketplace, which is where my student Joe pointed out in Canada. See, you Canadians already have free health care in Canada. And so you go to the doctor and you can't get what you want or what you need. So you come across the border down into the States and you buy it down here. Well, pretty soon we're going to have the same long lines that you have in Canada. So listen, all you got to do is go to your doctor next time you see him and say, hey, doc, what do you do on Saturdays and Sundays and Christmas, Easter, and New Year's? And he'll say, well, I have a little private practice. And if you want, I'll take care of that ingrown toenail, or I'll take care of this, that, or something else. Here's what my fee is going to be. And he'll just treat you on an outpatient basis right out of his home. I used to have a dentist like that. And I just went right over to the dentist's home, and he took care of my dental problems privately. How do you like that? All right, now on page 50, now there's a page number with each one of these. I want you to get a copy of this report yourself, but I'm going to give you the report. On page 22, 29, 30, now page 42, Health Choices Commissioner will decide health benefits for you. You're not going to have any choice. Page 50. All non-U.S. citizens, legal or illegal, will be provided with free health care services. The Obama plan calls for all U.S. citizens, legal or illegal, will be provided with free health care services. My God, I think that's a wonderful piece of legislation for all illegal aliens. I think all of you illegal aliens should be writing to Dianne Feinstein and senators and representatives. Hell, I think you people in Venezuela, Colombia, and Brazil should be writing to the Congress of the United States, encouraging those senators and representatives to vote for the Obama health care program. Why? Well, hell, maybe someday you may be coming here as an illegal alien and it'll cover you. And it'll be paid for by somebody else. It's a hell of a deal for Venezuelans, Brazilians, Colombians, and Mexicans. I don't deny it. Now, are these same Brazilians, Colombians, Venezuelans, and Mexicans going to be paying that 8% payroll tax and be paying for those same increased prices out at McDonald's for the Big Mac to pay for this? And the answer is no. You see, the way it is right now, it's just damn near as good. You can be a pregnant woman in Venezuela. And so you buy an airline ticket to Miami, you know, just coming to Miami to visit, spend the weekend. And when you get here, you go into labor. Oh, my God. So now you got to go to the hospital. Okay. It's a medical emergency. The law requires that we treat all medical emergencies regardless of race, color, or creed. And so the baby is delivered in Miami, and we Americans accept this newborn. He's born in the United States, so he's an American citizen. So the mother bundles up the kid, hauls him back to Venezuela with an American passport for the American kid with an American birth certificate. He's an anchor baby, and now she applies for citizenship for her baby. And then she has to come with it to take care of the baby, doesn't she? So now she's in the States with the baby, taking care of the American citizen, born in Miami, because it was a medical emergency when she was delivering. And so now she's got to have her husband and the rest of her children come to the United States. Now let me ask you this. Do you Mexicans down there have an equivalent program to that? For instance, let's suppose we've got a pregnant mother-to-be in Omaha, Nebraska, who wants to have free medical services in Mexico City. So she buys an airline ticket to Mexico City, has a medical emergency, checks into the Mexico City hospital, delivers her baby, which is now an American anchor baby in Mexico, for which now she's entitled to free delivery and free medical services because she's poor and can't pay for it. Now, the baby born there has Mexican citizenship. So she comes back to America, applies for Mexican citizenship because her baby now is a Mexican, and so now she has to go to Mexico City in order to take care of the baby who is a legitimate Mexican citizen. Now she applies for food stamps, welfare, and other aid to families with dependent children to take care of this Mexican citizen. Well, now she's separated from her husband in Omaha, Nebraska, and her other five children, so she makes application to have those children also and her husband admitted to Mexico on a green card so that he can now get a job or welfare, food stamps, and other benefits from the Mexican government. Do you Mexicans do that for Americans? And if not, why do we do it here in America for Mexicans? Now, again, I'm not criticizing the program. I think it's a hell of a neat program for Mexicans, Bolivians, Venezuelans, Colombians. I don't deny it. But, hey, for you American taxpayers, I mean, you guys that are out there paying the increased 8% cost for the Big Mac and paying the extra 8% out of your payroll taxes, is that good for you? Just thought I'd throw that one out there for you, you know. That's on page 50. Now, Dianne Feinstein knows that. How is she going to vote? Now remember, this guy, Fleckenstein, says that this runs the gamut from the absurd to the terrifying. I don't know. Do you think that's absurd? Do you think that's terrifying? It's not absurd and it's not terrifying to those that are availing themselves of the services, who are the illegal aliens who come here to get those free services. And you can rest assured that there isn't anybody in Mexico who doesn't know about those free services in Miami. I've asked Americans if they knew about that, and they said, no, they never heard of such a thing. Now, a few Americans do know it, shake their heads, click their tongues, and they say, my God, this is insane. Well, boys and girls, if now that you know this, you think this is insane and that God needs to help us, don't you think you should go to God, Congress, in the Washington, D.C. area and ask them to take a look at this and maybe make some modifications? I just throw that out for your consideration. I don't know if this is good for you or not. I know that you people want to provide this service for me. And I told you in the last program, I said, my God, leave me out. Count me out. I don't want it. I don't think I'm entitled to it. And I don't want it. You people are trying to force this on me against my will and over my objection. I've got to get up early in the morning. I've got to work hard to avoid this. And I just thought I'd let you know that. Dianne Feinstein and Ted Kennedy are trying to stick this up my hind end sideways. And I'm trying to avoid that. Plus, of course, I'm just George Gordon. And I'm just little Georgie. And, of course, most of you people are sitting out there saying, you know, that little Georgie's nuts. Here he is just about to get all these benefits, and he's trying to avoid them. That's page 50. Page 58, every person will be issued a national ID health card. I don't want a national ID card. I don't know about you, and I'm not opposed to national identification cards if you want to be identified by your master. After all, that's what identification is all about. It's the owner of something that wants to identify it. So we put VIN numbers on our automobiles so that we can identify our car and separate it from everybody else's. And we want to fingerprint our children and then record our children's fingerprints and pictures and identifications with our sheriff in case somebody snatches our kid so that we can identify our kid, things like that. Now, I don't want to be identified by a master like the United States of America. I don't want to be identified by California or Venezuela or Ozark County or somebody else. Okay, so I don't want a national ID health card. I don't want national health care. I don't want a national health care card, but every person in America is going to be issued one of these. It's page 58, page 59. The federal government will have direct real-time access to all individual bank accounts for electronic funds transfer. Well, First of all, they got to decide whether or not you qualify for these federal benefits. I mean, you know, if you're Bill Gates, you can't get it. You got to pay for it, but you can't get it. I remember that with unemployment insurance. One time I went down to the Department of Employment and I said, okay, our company is on layoffs. See, I was an employee of the company. And then they asked me, well, are you a stockholder in the company? Yes, I'm a stockholder. You can't draw unemployment benefits in a company that you own stock in. You own stock in General Motors? Are you an officer of the corporation? You can't draw unemployment benefits. You have to pay the unemployment tax, but you cannot draw the benefits. Bill Gates will have to pay for his national ID care card. No doubt about it. And if he has any, he's got too much money, he won't qualify. Won't that just be real special? That's on page 59. Page 84. Now I'm going to page 65, 72. There's a lot of these I'm going to skip. We don't have time to do 118. I just want to hit some of the highlights over here of the real nasty ones. Page 84. All private health care plans must participate in the health care exchange. For example, total government control of all private plans. So if you've got Blue Shield or Blue Cross or you've got Cigna or something else, whether you're happy with it or unhappy, it's all going to be controlled by the federal government, every one of them. Page 91, government mandates linguistic infrastructure for services. Translated, illegal aliens. All illegal aliens are going to have these infrastructure services provided for them whether they like it or not. Even if they don't want it, it's going to be stuck up their hind end, sideways. I've never met an illegal alien, so I don't know if they want it or don't, but all of you illegal aliens should be writing letters to Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi. I think I would, because you're going to get these benefits at the expense of the American taxpayers. Because, see, all of you illegal aliens, or at least most of you, get paid in cash under the table anyway, and you don't pay tax. I mean, that's the way the game's played. I mean, when I hire you off the street, and I pay you at the end of the day, I pay you in cash, and I don't make any deductions. So that's the way the game is played. All right, guys, I got to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.